You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
The year was 1993, and the Palestine Liberation Organization, the PLO, was negotiating secretly with the Israeli government in Norway. These negotiations gave birth to the Oslo Accords, and the Oslo Accords provided for an interim creation of a Palestine Authority. Interim because within 5 years, the Oslo Accords stipulated there would be a final settlement of the Israel-Palestine conflict. The Palestine Authority, or PA as it came to be referred to, would then have completed its function and dissolve. But now, 18 years on, and headed by Mahmoud Abbas, the PA still exists. Exists, yes, but in what condition? And to do what? And should it continue at all? To discuss these questions, I'm joined on the phone by Ali Abu Nima in Chicago. He's a co-founder of the premier English language website on this conflict, Electronic Intifada, and he's also an advisor for the recently established Palestine Advisory Network. Good morning, Ali, and welcome back to Red Eye.
Good morning, Mordecai.
Most recently, the Palestine Authority has suffered two heavy blows. The first from revelations in Al Jazeera and The Guardian about the way they were conducting quote-unquote peace negotiations with the Israelis. What was revealed that was so damaging for the Palestine Authority?
Well, a lot was revealed in this trove of some 1,600 documents, 20,000 pages. I'd say two broad categories of information. One had to do with the kind of extent to which the Palestinian Authority were ready to go in terms of compromising basic Palestinian rights and making offers to an Israeli government that wasn't even interested in negotiating. And one example of that was on Jerusalem, where the Israelis had said, this was back in 2008 under the government of Ehud Olmert, they'd said, look, we're not going to negotiate about Jerusalem. We're just not going to talk about it. And the Palestinian Authority came in and showed maps, which basically they had conceded to Israel all of the settlements, virtually all of the settlements Israel had built in and around Jerusalem. And, of course, this is catastrophic even in terms of negotiating tactics, to show your bottom line to an adversary that is not even interested in negotiating with you. Because, of course, the Israelis then take that as the maximum ceiling. That's just one example. The other category of information is really it showed the extent to which the Palestinian Authority had become a creature of the Israeli occupation, of the American Bush doctrine in the region. It was to be armed and trained for the purpose of suppressing Palestinian resistance. And really the building up not of the nucleus of an independent sovereign Palestinian state, but of a pseudo-police state of exactly the kind that we're now seeing toppled in Egypt and in Tunisia and other countries. That's really what the American project in Palestine had become, and all that is laid bare in the Palestine papers.
So you mentioned the uprising of the Egyptian people forcing Mubarak to resign. Was that also a damaging blow to the Palestine Authority?
Absolutely, because, you know, the Palestinian Authority had become like Mubarak, aligned with Israel and the United States and the so-called moderate bloc. And the loss of Egypt, I mean, Egypt was really the keystone in this American hegemonic system in the region. And the loss of Egypt from that bloc is really a disaster to the Palestinian Authority and also to other so-called moderate regimes like Jordan. You know, these are much smaller regimes, and without the cover given to them by Egypt, they are really very, very exposed. Because, of course, Egypt was an ally with the Palestinian Authority in the ongoing war against Hamas and the ongoing war against the Palestinian people in Gaza.
Now, in the aftermath of these two events, the Palestine Papers and the overthrow of Mubarak, the Palestine Authority took several initiatives. Saeb Erekat, the chief negotiator for the PA, resigned. The whole cabinet resigned. Elections are being promised in September. Are these real efforts to rebuild credibility, or are they maneuvers to divert popular anger with the Palestinian authorities' failures and betrayals?
They are very much maneuvers, because what we've seen is growing disquiet among Palestinians, particularly against the Palestinian Authority, but really also against the whole legacy of division and factionalization. Quite a bit of this anger is also directed against Hamas, although I'd say primarily people do see the Oslo Accords and the system, the subservient system dependent on the occupation that the Oslo Accords of 1993 created, as really an obstacle to liberation and to freedom. And so, yes, the call for elections from the Palestinian Authority, completely disingenuous, because, you know, they have created a police state in which they've crushed opposition to Mahmoud Abbas, and then they say, oh, we'd like to have elections. So it's totally disingenuous. And, of course, the bigger picture here is that, you know, the West Bank and Gaza Strip is only a fraction of the Palestinian people. And what we need to see is bringing together the entire Palestinian people, including, of course, the majority who live in the diaspora, and also Palestinians in Israel, into a unified struggle for their rights. And that's what the Oslo Accords really shattered. They excluded the diaspora and, privileged, politically at least, the Palestinians in the West Bank and Gaza. And that strategy has failed. We're much stronger united, the entire Palestinian people together.
You've argued to that end in an article published in Al Jazeera on Thursday that the Palestine Authority should simply dissolve itself. Why do you advocate that now?
Well, I'm not the only person to suggest that, of course, but I do believe it should dissolve because it is simply a front for the Israeli occupation. It is like the Vichy government of France during the German occupation. I'm not comparing them in terms of their actions. Of course, the Vichy government, we know, was responsible for deporting tens of thousands of Jews. I'm not comparing them in the sense of the atrocities. What I'm comparing them in the sense of a puppet regime of a foreign military occupier. This Palestinian Authority should dissolve, and Palestinians should say to the Israeli occupiers, you are occupying us, you bear the responsibility under the Fourth Geneva Convention. It is not our responsibility to help you occupy us and to make your occupation more comfortable for you. And Palestinians should not assist the occupier anymore. That's what the Palestinian Authority is doing today. It is helping Israel to occupy, oppress, and dispossess Palestinians. What Palestinians should focus on is the struggle to liberate themselves through all the strategies that they're using now, whether it's popular struggle, whether it is the global boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement, and let Israel worry about running its occupation, and we should be putting pressure on Israel to end the occupation, not to make it more comfortable for Israel, as the Palestinian Authority is doing.
You mentioned you're not the only one to think along these lines. What kind of discussion is happening among Palestinians in the diaspora, in the occupied territories inside Israel, that gives you conviction that this is a practical way to go?
Well, a number of things. I mean, there is growing discussion. I think what we haven't had enough discussion about is I think Palestinians have been somewhat reactive. And, you know, when you look at the revolutions in Egypt and Tunisia and other places, what we see is those were, in a sense, leaderless revolutions, or revolutions, you can think of it alternatively, as having millions of leaders. And we should worry less about, you know, representative structures like the Palestinian Authority and this kind of thing, and really focus on on the struggle. And we do see more Palestinians taking initiatives. For example, I've heard that on Monday there is to be a protest in Washington, D.C. outside the Palestinian Authority offices calling for the dissolution of the Palestinian Authority. Let me just say, that's an initiative I have absolutely nothing to do with. I heard about it, and I think that that's great that Palestinians are making their voices heard that way. I've heard that Mahmoud Abbas is traveling to Canada, as he's done in the past, and even in Canada, Palestinians talking about protests against Abbas. So what this shows is that Palestinians in the diaspora are taking back the initiative. They're saying, we have allowed these people to lead us to a dead end. Enough is enough. It's time for us to speak for ourselves and recreate our own future. And I think that that's a discussion that more and more Palestinians absolutely have to become part of.
Is that why you titled your article Toward Palestine's Mubarak Moment?
Yes, and what inspired me for that was that, you know, Mubarak left, and it didn't solve all of the problems of Egypt. In fact, there is still an ongoing revolution in Egypt, but it opened the door to the future in which Egyptians really take back the fate of their country. And we see that that revolution is continuing. Just yesterday, Friday, millions of people were out in the streets in Egypt. They're still out in the streets in Tunisia, and people are saying, we will not rest until our demands are met. And I think, in a sense, for all the sacrifices that they have made, and the struggle, the ongoing struggle of Palestinians for the past six decades, in a certain sense, we became too passive, or we became sort of overwhelmed to, you know, saying, well, Israel is too strong, the forces against us are too strong. And what we see really is that actually people power is a tremendously dynamic force, and I think that Palestinians and their allies have the potential to bring justice, to bring equality, to bring an end to Israel and Zionism's oppression as it exists today in the occupied territories and other parts of Palestine within a few years, and to have the kind of future of equality, of an end to apartheid that I believe most Palestinians want to see.
Well, thank you very much again, Ali, for your insights and your stimulation.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Ali Abu Nima. He's co-founder of Electronic Intifada. He's an advisor of the recently established Palestine Advisory Network. And you can find his most recent article that I mentioned at aljazeera.net. It's titled Towards Palestine's Mubarak Moment. Or you can go to electronicintifada.net, where there is also a link to his article.